cases, he was seen as a separate individual with, let's say, one or two deceased relatives of the live person standing there observing, and lights, just spots of lights that just surround them. And in several cases, again, it was noted that there was like a large flame, almost candle-like, that would be emanating from Natuta's hands as if it was her thumb that was sticking up, showing the way for, let's say, the deceased people. It just got, I don't know how much you've heard about this case, but I ended up interviewing many, many witnesses, very credible people, professionals, academic people, medical people, religious people, who all came away with quite similar claims of seeing the Natuta in this form.
When she would appear with, say, a relative of the deceased, did the viewer have someone with them that could verify this? And would the other person who was not a relative, let's say, also see that relative?
Well, the only cases that I was able to document of that sort, they were the people were relatives. So I do not recall off the top of my head whether I interviewed people who, let's say, it was a non-relative who was also there to witness her.
But you did have some collective witnessing, you didn't?
Yes, there was several collective witness cases. So it would be interesting that somebody, let's say, would see Natuta or an apparition, and maybe not recognizing Natuta immediately and put out a yell or some kind of noise, and then the other person, let's say a husband, would run into the room and see the same apparition. I had that reported at least, I'd say, in-depth interviews about three separate cases where husband-wife dyads would see Natuta, father-daughter, husband-wife-daughter. There's quite a lot of those, yes.
She also has another amazing ability, I understand, and that's the ability to be at two places at the same time.
Yes.
Can you explain that to me? Or at least the phenomenon?
No, I can't. I think I would let maybe Raymond or Elizabeth take a stab at that. What I was able to look at mostly, Bill, was trying to document whether these witnesses were credible people, whether Natuta did exist, and if so, I needed to talk to medical people and professional people that served as legitimate witnesses that I could feel comfortable about that there's something was genuine happening out there. What I did get to see as far as physical evidence post facto was the hemographies, the religious symbols and forms that would come across on cloth or napkins and so on. But
you saw that firsthand then?
Yeah, I really can't say much about the bilocation. Raymond might want to take a stab at that.
He's going to get a chance to here.
All right.
Perhaps the simplest way to put it is that is to put her and, I say, refer her to the entire history of bilocation or out-of-body... what do they call it? Out-of-body experience?
Well, is she out-of-body because of that?
I forgot the name. Or the old-fashioned term astral projection. So no, it really isn't, because bilocation has a slightly different meaning. But as to the reality of the thing, I'm in a rather enviable position because I myself was in a case and I saw just such a thing. I saw the visible apparition of a friend in my own room, and I was able to then verify afterwards independently that he had made a deliberate attempt to, let us say, project himself to my home at that time, the description of the house, the incidents that took place, everything matched. There's no conceivable way he could possibly know it. So I know from personal experience that the thing does exist. So there's no reason, there's no intrinsic reason to doubt that such a thing can exist with Natuta. And it has, of course, a very long church tradition.
Well,
I would just make those comments.
In these bilocation things, the person is existing in one place, and then all at once appears someplace else. Now, and it's not just a wispy apparition, as I understand it. It's there just as solid as you are here. Right?
Yeah, and bilocation generally refers to a physical double. In other words, there's a physical body in one position, and the double that is seen is also physical, has the characteristics of physical matter. Well, it's also true in out-of-body phenomena. that you have various types. You have things that are visually seen that may or may not have objective existence, and you have those that are apparently as solid as a normal body, and then you have intermediate types that can produce rafts, move objects, and so on. So you have a whole gamut. Now, as to explanations, there are no explanations. There are no explanations of any psychic phenomenon. There is nothing known about the actual operation of any psychic phenomenon. For instance, people sometimes think that the ESP, they take telepathy, is quite well known. It is not. All is known is what takes place, the description of the facts. But there is nothing known about
the mechanism.
The mechanism whatsoever, the actual origin of any psychic phenomena.
In the bilocation thing you experienced, was he there, your friend, as if he had walked in ordinarily?
No, just suddenly appeared.
He just suddenly was there?
Yeah.
But in his full, solid physical form?
His was more out of body, wasn't it?
No, it was an out of body type thing.
How did you see it?
It wasn't a physical duplicate.
Oh.
The apparition, it was an apparition. Now, whether it had any solidity or not, I don't know, because I didn't think to touch it.
Hmm.
I was so shocked that I didn't think about it, but if I had had present enough of mind, I'd have simply reached over and touched it.
But it wasn't a physical form. I mean, it wasn't a body.
As a human, no. It was in a geometrical form. Mm-hmm. And it was off the floor about 1 foot, so it had certain characteristics that weren't quite normal.
Like a trapezoid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, in Natutsu's case, though, they have witnesses of her being at two different places at exactly the same time.
That's right.
Very credible witnesses, right?
Right. One, I recall, was there a monk I met in Catanzaro, which is about 100 kilometers from Natutsu's home, which is a very small village of about 1,000 people, I believe. And he had heard so many stories over the years about this amazing woman, so he went down there one afternoon, and I'm not sure if Elizabeth has told you about this, but there's 200 to 300 people who line up at her door mm-hmm. to see her daily. So he had a chance to get in there, and was what he thought was quite unimpressed by her, is what he told me, although he was quite excited talking about her. He went down, continued down 60 kilometers to a town called Reggio Calabria, and he started to take a walk before he was scheduled to enter a meeting, and he saw the full body apparition of Natutsu in front of him, just directly ahead of him, maybe 15 yards, he said, on the street. And he immediately went into a trot to go towards her, and she started moving away from him, turned the corner, and he immediately turned the corner, and there's nowhere for her to go, but she was gone. She disappeared. And so we hear stories like that from, you know, monks and priests. We're also here from, I remember meeting a woman who's a professor in also that same town, Catanzaro, and she reported several experiences where she'd be on the phone with Natutsu, and then shortly thereafter, she would be with another family member, husband or daughter. And by the way, her daughter serves as a medical doctor who attends to Natutsu during the Passion when she's going through the stigmata. That they would get off the phone and there would be some type of symbol or sign left that Natutsu had been there, like blood on a tablecloth or a curtain or an object left, some type of religious object left in a place that, you know, that neither one of the people who had lived there owned. So, like Raymond said, there's various types of evidence or styles of bilocation. Some of them you don't actually see the figure, but you see the physical remains or evidence shortly thereafter. Which is, it's virtually impossible for her to be at one place on the telephone and then 100 kilometers, seconds thereafter.
Well, it's an unusual mode of travel she has, evidently, and Metro Rail would love to hear about how she's doing that. Okay, let's go to Omar, who's been standing by here, I think. Al. Hello, Al.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to ask your guest what they know about this Italian priest by the name of Padre Pio, who also was a stigmatist, and who died, I believe, in 1968.
Raymond.
Well, Padre Pio was a very famed stigmatist. He was one of the great Catholic mystics. He manifested quite a number of abilities under excellent conditions. Yes, he was a stigmatist. He was an out-of-body, a bilocator, abnormal perfumes, appeared, to use the word that way, in his presence, there were all types of effects, lights and so forth. And he was one of the most, shall we say, varied or gifted of the modern great Italian mystics.
We had some real personal experience with this man.
Oh, really?
If I'd like to mention that to you.
We'd love to hear about it, yes.
Okay, in 1964, when my wife was pregnant for the third time, she had an appendectomy. And everything went fine, and about 2 weeks after she came out of the hospital, she developed a severe kidney infection. And she was 5 months pregnant, and I visited her, and the doctor told me that things weren't looking too good. And if things wouldn't improve, that might have to terminate the pregnancy, which I, as a Catholic, would never give my permission to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got so desperate that one evening when I came back from the hospital, because I thought she was going to die, that I sat down and wrote a letter to Padre Pio asking him to help me to pray to God for God to cure my wife. And the following day, she was her condition remarkably improved, and the doctor was totally surprised. And I just believe. And then when I talked to my wife, she said that in that particular evening, while she was sort of dazing off, she felt like a heavy hand touching her. And she also experienced this strong perfume. And I just believe that this...
This happened the day after you sent the letter?
Right. Yes.
Had the father had a chance to get the letter yet?
No.
So it happened even before
right.
he received the letter?
Sure, that's the remarkable thing all about it.
Hmm.
And the doctor was totally surprised. He couldn't, he talked to me. He says, Mr. Al, it's unbelievable what has taken place during the night.
Did you ever hear from the father? Did he respond to your letter in any way?
No, he didn't.
That's awfully interesting.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Okay. It's Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. Dr. Liz McAdams is with us of the Southern California Society for Psychical Research, along with Raymond Bayless and Mike Nanko. And we're here to answer your questions, any of them that you may have, observations concerning this sometimes very amazing, astounding, and unexplained world of psychic phenomena. You know, and we're talking now to Josie. Josie?
Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, Bill. I love your program. It's so fascinating.
I love having you aboard.
I had an experience, and I'd like to share it with you.
Okay.
I was in the kitchen one night when my husband called to me and asked me for a cup of coffee. When I turned around to face him, my father appeared, who had been dead over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And behind my father, the clock on the wall said 9 o'clock. 2 days later, my husband died at exactly 9 o'clock. Then I visited my sister several months later, and I told her of this experience. She said she had the identical experience. My father appeared to her 2 days before her husband died. Could you explain that?
Well, I wouldn't want Dad appearing too often, you know, to too many of the kids, for one thing. Did he say anything to you, and did he seem physically like he was in the room, or was it sort of a wispy apparition?
It looked just like, as if he were alive.
Mm-hmm.
Identical to his living body. There was no light that I remember about him. The only thing that should have alerted me was he had a very sad face.
But he didn't say anything?
Didn't say a word.
Or gesture in any way?
No.
How long were you able to see him?
Oh, I'd say a good 30 seconds. Because I just stopped dead short.
Well, you know, Josie, experiences like this, there are various theories, and to me, all of them fall short except the one that seems the most obvious, and that is that it was indeed your father who does survive death, and that he wanted to warn you of something coming up and wanted to somehow soften it a little bit for you, or when you had to face it, that you could be a little bit comforted that he was still there. You know, the other explanations fall so flat. For example, oh, you were hallucinating.
Yeah.
Well, why would you hallucinate that at that particular time? Or wishful thinking. Well, you know, it's obvious that there was no wishful thinking involved. Precognition. The precognition couldn't explain your father.
Mm-hmm.
It would only relate to the 9 o'clock. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a very good example of what's commonly called survival evidence, that it was a precognition, yes, but it was also indicating that your the consciousness of your father survived. Or at least that's the way I would interpret it.
Yeah, well, I had no thought of my father. He had been dead over 30 years. You know, and we didn't discuss him or anything at that time.
It wasn't something that was always floating on your mind, was your father?
No, no.
Mm-hmm.
So after so long a time, you know, you just think now and then about the memories. But at that particular time, there was nothing.
Josie, how did you feel when you saw your father?
I felt secure,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not. Because my father was a lovely person. Very loving, very gentle.
Did you attempt to communicate with your father at all, or were you just kind of stunned by what you were seeing?
I was just stunned. Absolutely stunned. I couldn't open my mouth.
If you would be kind enough and willing to write that experience, I would really appreciate it.
I would do that gladly.
Mm.
And then I told you I went to see my sister, and the same identical thing happened to her.
See, that gets beyond the realm of just a coincidence. Whenever it happened to your sister and was precognitive in the same kind of way about the passing of your husband's.
That's
a skeptic has to look at that and kind of chew a little bit, I think.
It'd be interesting to have your sister's account, too, if
well,
possible.
My sister's husband died about 3 years before my husband did, but she never told me about that.
Uh-huh.
So I visited her, and she lives in Massachusetts, and I'm here in California. And I just happened to, you know, to tell her about it, and she said, "Isn't that strange? That happened to me, too."
Well, that's very interesting to hear that. I appreciate your sharing it.
Have you got any more sisters?
Yes, I have. Two more.
I'll be on the lookout for Dad.
No, I think it's a good omen because, as the lady said, it softens the blow.
Yeah, it does.
It gave me a little bit of security and a good feeling.
This kind of manifestation, gang, is not that unusual with people, is it? Particularly where it's close, a husband, wife, father, children.
That's right, it's not. And it does happen more often, much more often, among those who love each other, fathers and children and husbands and wives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very real experience, and quite often conversation and dialogue takes place.
That's right, and for this many years to have passed after your father's death,
mm-hmm.
I think is really remarkable, too.
Yes, I feel he's watching over us.
Certainly got an eye on things.
Oh, yes.
All right, Josie, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
And we have Lucia. Is that right, Lucia?
Yes.
Hi, how are you, Lucia?
I'm fine. I'm enjoying your program, and every time I can hear it.
Well, thank you.
I have a very, it's a common question, probably. My husband died 11 years ago. I have three children, 20 years between my son and daughter. My daughter's very psychic. I am, but I seem to ignore it. I don't anymore. My mother was psychic. The first time it happened, my husband had been dead a year. Our favorite flower was gardenia. And the overpowering fragrance of gardenia just came floating through an empty house that we were checking out. I didn't say anything to her, and she says, "Have you got perfume on?" And I said, "No, I thought it was you." This was found to be noticed by people that didn't even know of this happening. It happens all the time. It happened last week for 5 minutes, so strong. And if it brushes me, you can smell it on my arm. What does this mean, and why do I never see, what do you call it, when they appear?
An apparition.
Yes.
Raymond?
Well, as to explanations, there are none. Again, it may perfectly well be indications of a spirit. Just, that's one very good theory. In fact, it actually is the best. But as to, you know, as to any further explanation, it's almost impossible to give any. As we mentioned before, the appearance of odors is quite common.
Yeah, fragrances seem to be something that is used a lot.
Oh, I must have missed that.
So, what you say is a comparatively common type of thing, and I think it's certainly, as Elizabeth said, a very comforting thing.
Yes, I called my sister because it was so overpowering, and it hadn't been around me for a while, but it had been around my daughter who left home to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And She said, well, how do you feel when it's around you? Does it frighten you? I said, oh, no. I mean, it's a cover. I just can't. I don't know what it means.
I think it's quite interesting that she can pick up the scent and it would be on her own skin afterwards, too. That's that's unusual.
Well, it's on my skin. I mean, it's as though I had put perfume on. I have one more question, if I could ask it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Your shoes are still in the garage. Everything in there gathers dust, but his shoes don't. I don't mean to say they look as though he was going to stand inspection, but they don't gather dust. And I am the only house that hasn't been robbed in this area. Does that have a meaning?
Well, there's no way of answering such a thing. It might be coincidence or it might not. There simply is no way of telling. That's about all I can say.
Uh-huh.
Everything else in the garage gets dust on it but his shoes. Huh?
Yes. As I say, he wouldn't stand inspection in them. But they are not dusty like the rest of the garage.
Yeah. What did Mike say?
Mike?
Pardon?
A little bit of levity interjected there, but I think it passed.
Oh. Well, he's just keeping his shoes shy.
I suspected that.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. What did I miss?
We all missed it.
Grilling. Just grilling.
Well, I think we're all just sort of mystified by the experience that you're having and wish that we had a good explanation for it, but we really don't. It unfortunately just has to sort of go under the heading of an anomalous or unexplained experience. But your experience with the perfume is something that has a lot of precedent. You know, as some of the things we've mentioned, it's so often related to the sighting of ghosts or the experiencing of the deceased, and so that really is much more common.
Yes, and I have never seen him. I don't feel that he's around me.
Mm-hmm.
When the smell of the gardenia comes, it used to be the smell in his barber kit, but my daughter said, I wish Daddy would change that perfume. And it stopped and became the fragrance of gardenias. Which was our favorite flower.
Well, enjoy the fragrance, and I think take comfort in it.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Okay, Lucia, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Thank you for listening.
All right. And we have Emma on the line. Emma, is that right?
Yes, Alma.
Alma. Hi, Alma.
Hi. I wanted to see if you could maybe give me some insight to what has happened to me. I have seen at two separate times a very tall man. He's dressed like in a white gi. He must be about 9 feet tall. Over the right shoulder, he's wearing like a gold braid. Now, the first time I saw him was here in Los Angeles. And under the conditions that I saw him, a friend of mine who was a psychic told me it was probably someone for my neighbors. But in the meantime, I moved from Los Angeles to the Virgin Islands. And I saw him again down in the Virgin Islands. So I realized that it had to have been someone for me. And I can't understand what it's all about.
Well, I was going to get Raymond to answer that one, talk to you about that one. But, of course, apparitional sightings, only some of them are explainable. You know, some of them are our fathers or mothers, or they're recognizable by the witnesses. But others seem to come from other cultures and other dresses and other costumes, and it would just be conjecture to try to figure out what their connection is with you, if any, or whether they have a connection to the location or for some other reason are appearing to you. Raymond, what do you think?
Oh, I think that's very well stated. I'd agree exactly with what Elizabeth said.
How tall did you say he was?
Oh, I'd say about 9 feet tall.
Jerry Buss would like to find him. That's a very tall fellow.
Yeah.
So it obviously, you don't know anyone in your family. There is no one in your memory of that stature, I wouldn't think.
No, no.
Does anyone else see him but you?
No.
You're the only one.
That's right. I'm always alone.
Mm-hmm.
Does he smile or seem to try to communicate in any way?
No, he just silently glides by. And like it's with like a blinking of the eye.
Does he look at you or anything?
No.
Unaware of your presence, it seems.
Yeah, he just keeps walking.
And you've seen him twice?
And I've seen him twice. I saw him here in Los Angeles and then down in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands.
It doesn't frighten you in any way?
Oh, no. No.
Well?
You know, the frustrating thing about things like this is you always want to say to the person, try to take a picture, but who's carrying a camera, you know, in the middle of the night? Or you don't ever happen to have one with you when it happens, but obviously if that ever did, that would be satisfying to you as well as others to be able to show them. But that's just one of the frustrations of spontaneous cases, that these apparitions don't often come into a laboratory.
Well,
so we're stuck with the real life.
They don't cooperate that way.
Well, they can't stand the boredom.
What did Mike say?
What did you say, Mike?
We always leave that door open for them.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day they'll go in there and be bored by
all
of it.
I think they show singularly good taste.
You know, that reminds me, the International Foundation for Survival Research wants very much to raise enough funds to support a project which is waiting for funding, which has to do with this. Dr. Carlos Osis at the American Society for Psychical Research, one of the most eminent researchers in the world dealing with the astral projection or the out-of-body apparition. And what he wants to do is that he feels that a lot of the past studies in the laboratory have demonstrated an out-of-body projection is possible, where you take a person in one room and ask him to project consciousness to the next. And sometimes, though, in those experiments, unexpectedly, the apparition of the person is seen in the target room, in the separate room.
Oh, gracious.
See?
Mm.
Uh-huh. And what he's wanting to do is to carry this kinds of experiments further and attempt to get on film the out-of-body apparition, to demonstrate once and for all this is not anything except a reality that is possible to project.
Uh-huh.
And that, of course, is related to apparitional sightings in general.
Oh, does that help you, Emma?
Well, not really, because, like I say, there's no one in my family 9 feet tall.
I don't know of anybody's family that has a 9-footer in it. But I think that's about the best we can do for you.
Uh-huh.
All right,
well,
thank you.
I've put it out there into the world. Maybe somebody will have an answer.
It's in the ether, and maybe it'll come back to us.
Truly.
Okay.
Have a nice evening. Keep up the good things.
Thank you very much.
Night-night.
A 9-footer. Okay. Eileen, what's on your mind?
Hi. I, too, have a story. It isn't my story, but it's a very fascinating one. A friend of mine's mother took her own life, and at the funeral home, they were walking my friend back and forth in front of the home because she couldn't bring herself to go in. She was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was coming back again, or being walked back again toward the entrance, she saw a dark limousine in front of the funeral place, and two funerary men dressed in black were helping her mother out of the car. And her mother was dressed like she always dressed. She had a certain style of dressing. She was a very beautiful woman. And she was doubled over in grief. And my friend knew, or was given telepathically, I guess you might say, as she looked at her, that her mother was being brought back to see the pain that she had caused others by taking her own life.
Brought back to her own funeral, then?
Yes.
That is quite an interesting story. I've never quite heard anything like that. Have you, gang?
No.
No, I haven't.
That's unique.
I've caught hold of a couple of photographs of what appeared to be figures or apparitions over funeral sites, cemeteries, you know, during the course of the procession or just afterwards, but I've never heard anything quite like that.
I have heard that people do go to their own funerals, though.
Was this only a couple of days after the death? Do you remember the funeral being held just a couple of days or more, less?
I imagine it wasn't much more than that.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Usually is.
Because I was thinking, which this would not apply here, but thinking about the clinical death experience, you know, which does suggest that possibly when people do die, that they have to go through sort of a review period of their whole life. And
yes,
it might relate to
yes,
that person going through a review of what her actions caused others to do and feel.
Yes, I agree with you. And the near-death experience tells us that people do see the cause of their, or the outcome of their actions. And, yeah, that's what I thought when I heard the story.
Well, it's a very interesting story, and we thank you very much for sharing that
with us.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye.
Here with Open Mind tonight, I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Raymond Bayless, Dr. Liz McAdams. We have Mike Nanko on the phone, all of the Southern California Society for Psychical Research, and it's always a fascinating subject, and there's something that you want to contribute, questions that you have to have. We have a few lines open, and you're welcome to call right on in. In Los Angeles, the number is 520-TALK, San Fernando Valley, 990-TALK. We're talking about psychic phenomena, and we have some experts on the line. Mike Nanko's on the line. Mike, is there... Hello there. He was on the line. And we have Raymond Bayless in here, Dr. Liz McAdams, and we have on the phone, we'll get back to Mike, I guess he fell off. We have Brian in there. Hello, Brian. Where are we? Are you there, Brian?
Yeah.
Here we are. Here we are.
Great subject for a rainy night.
Yes,
yeah.
I guess so. We'll talk about it on a rainy night, right?
Yeah, I got some chills in my car. I had a question about spirit guides. I had a reading from a medium once in Casadega, Florida, which is a community of spiritualists. And they saw some guides around me and said that everyone has a band of spirit guides that travels with them, advising them and helping.